Accession number 19049, Reel 10.
Malcolm Connolly, Reel 10.
Yes, I remember those words of my parents. And my mother hated the army. My father loved it.
Why did you hate it?
But my mother hated the army, mainly because she went to India. And she not only lost two children there, but she had two children. My sister and I were born in India. And my brothers Tammy and my sister Doris died in India. And my mother never, ever, right to the day she died, ever forgot or forgave the army for that. And but my father, of course, was a different kettle of fish. He was a soldier through and through. He had been around, he fought in the First War, he served in the Second War, and of course the Second War killed him. But he was 58. He couldn't get back in the army, so he got back into the Air Force. And at 58, he was just too old. And but he just couldn't be left out of it. He had to participate in some way or other. India, I have happy memories of India. I quite liked India. We could go shooting, swimming. Not when we was in outlandish places like Nara Camp, but there was such an influx of troops coming from the United Kingdom that they had to find somewhere for us. And it was completely without any amenities whatsoever. But no, I quite enjoyed India. In fact, I enjoyed going back in the 1970s. What use I achieved, I don't know. Why they sent all us young men to India when they had no tanks, no guns, no lorries, and to risk our lives coming all that way, 4.5 months on the water. Whether they had a particular use for us, whether they were going to send us someplace or not, I don't know. There were so many rumours floating about which were never confirmed. As an armoured corps draft, we were rumours were floating about that we was going to Rangoon as reinforcements to the 7th Armoured Brigade, who had been brought all the way from the Middle East. That in itself will tell you the state of the Indian Army, that you had famous regiments of somewhere between 200 and 300 years of tradition, who had no vehicles, had no arms, no tank unit in India was proficiently capable of fighting a war. And so they had to bring the 7th Armoured Brigade, which was a veteran brigade from the Middle East, all the way, drop them off at Rangoon, where they fought the rearguard action all the way through Burma. It didn't say a great deal for the efficiency and the competence of the British Indian Army at the time. There was more Colonel Blimps in India and then there was in the rest of the world. A lot of them had been there so long, didn't want to come home. And I'm talking about high rankers. They'd been in India as young lieutenants. They were waited on hand and foot. They were the elite of India. But it was different being another rank. The European, the English, the British population of the big cities didn't like us very much, possibly with just cause. I don't know. Perhaps we misbehaved. Possibly did. But there was nothing else to do. Nowhere to go. Nobody wanted to talk to us. I was in Secunderabad Hospital with amoebic dysentery. And in that time, you have, I think it's 4 weeks of needles. Because amoebic is an actual bug that eats you. And you have to have an injection of emmentine. Marvellous how I remember. Emmentine. Once a day for so many days, which is in excess of 14 days. And in that time, not one person came to that hospital to talk to the young soldiers who were many, many thousands of miles away from home, had no friends. There was newspapers. There was hardly any music. We had an old wind-up gramophone, which had one record, had no more, just one record. And that was, she had to go and lose at the Astor. I still can remember that being chanted out hour after hour, hour after hour, of somebody winding it up and putting it on, because it was the only record to play. And there was nobody. The mail used to come down from the regiment. The papers used to be delivered, which were Indian papers, in English, of course. But there was no niceties of life whatsoever. And I can well understand the people, the Brits, who were domiciled to big places like that, who didn't like us very much. The only time they liked us is when Gandhi and his civil disobedience started to run amok. Then they started to shout out, "Where's the soldiers?" And I don't remember India and that score. Certainly, I never had anybody stop me and take me home or ask me. I had one recollection that a friend of mine who was off duty, and we was wandering through the streets of Bombay, and lo and behold, in this very upper crust area, Malabar Hill, where all the real upper crust of the British, either military or civil servants, lived. And there was a MG stuck outside this house. And of course, being young, we stopped to look and to admire. And while we stood, we didn't touch it. And while we stood there, a Parsi gentleman came out. And he said, "You like my car?" Spoke perfect English, dressed completely European. And but he was a Parsi. And not yet. Not yet. He took us, he said, "Would you like a ride?" So I said, "Oh, yeah." So we piled into this MG and he took us. And when we came back, he took us into the house, which is a magnificent house. And he introduced us to his family, all Parsi, but they weren't, you couldn't get to know them. They introduced themselves, the women folk come in and said who they were. And we sat on the floor, Parsi fashion, and he fed them water. I don't remember what it was now. And as we left, I said to him, I said, "Can you tell me who you are?" He said, "I'm Sir Ezra Jijiboy." And he was one of the most famous of Parsis, and certainly one of the most richest Parsis in India.
Could you please tell me the story about your application to get compassionate leave?
Well, it was during the siege of Imphal, and I know that my father had enlisted, much against my mother's wishes, into the RAF because he was quite elderly. He had served in the First War with the 12th Royal Lancers, and I knew he had tried to get back into the army. And the army, his old commanding officer in the 12th Lancers said, "No, you're just too old." And not to be defeated, he, as he was a hairdresser by trade, he enlisted into the RAF as a hairdresser because they were crying out for people. I didn't know that he'd been ill. Had not the faintest idea, because my folk at home hadn't written to me and said, "Well, your father's quite ill." I was quite unaware that he was unwell. I was quite unaware that he died. And it wasn't until, it must have been July, yeah, he died on the 8th of June, 8th of June 1944. So it must have been late June, early July 1944, that one of my officers came up and said, "Read that, Connolly," he said, and signed the bottom. And to my amazement, it was an official document from Sir Claude Auchinlecht, CNC India Command. And it stated that compassionate repatriation to the United Kingdom had been refused, the fact that 7945760 Trooper Connolly M was a veteran soldier of the jungle and could not be replaced, and also that in his opinion that there were other things, other people more urgent than what my case was. At that time, I didn't really know that my father had died. Not until I signed this paper and returned it back to my squadron leader. But I did pass the remark to him. And I said, "Sir," I said, "if they kill me today," I said, they will be replacing me. And he just smiled and said, "Well, that's the way it is." So my father had died earlier on June the 8th, for 2 days after D-Day. And my mother had applied for me to be repatriated. She hadn't said to me about it, didn't know anything about it. But I would have thought, and after so many years, my father had enlisted into the army at quite a young age, 18, 19, 20, I'm not quite sure. He had fought throughout the First World War. He was a 12th Royal Lancer. He fought right through the First World War. And when the Second World War started, he went into the Home Guard. He was a sergeant in the Home Guard. That wasn't good enough for him, and he got into the RAF. My eldest brother was serving in the RAF in Canada. My youngest brother was a commando in North Wales, and I was serving in Southeast Asia. Not one of my father's sons was allowed to be represented at his funeral. I would have thought that after 25, 26 years of service to his nation, that he deserved more. But I never did get home.